Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time to take you behind the scenes in Smash Mouth.
Cuts across, he scores!
This is the Preds Official Podcast with Thomas Willis and Brooks Bratton.
Powerful move from back of the net.
On Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Episode 79 of the Predators Official Podcast. Thanks for joining us here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app and wherever you find this, your favorite podcast. Brooks Bratton and Thomas Willis of NashvillePredators.com back along with you. Calvin Smith pushing buttons, making us sound good as always. The final episode of the month of March. Of course, we thought we'd be in the heat of a playoff race right now. And as we all know, unfortunately, we are now 2 weeks into the pause of the 2019-2020 NHL season. We'll have the latest updates on how the league is handling the coronavirus pandemic. Plus, all sorts of fun things coming up. Lots to discuss. Thomas, you and I are staying healthy. We hope everyone else is as well. And it's good to talk to everyone for another week, too.
It is. Once you said episode 79, one of those instances where something completely random pops into your mind. And I was like, has a Nashville Predator ever worn the number 79? Do you know?
I don't off the top of my head.
The answer is no. And this, of course, is like, I'm not including the preseason or like a scrimmage or something. No, there's never been a 77, 78, 79, or 80. Our next number ever worn in episode would be 81, worn in 2006 by Mike Sillinger.
Mike Sillinger,
yes,
wow.
Who played trade deadline acquisition and playoff hero.
Well, I was going to say trade deadline acquisition. I'm pretty sure he played for like 15 teams over 20 years.
He did. Yes, he did. But anyway, sorry.
Crazy.
There you went. You said 79 and I got distracted and we're only 2 minutes into the show.
79.
Great start.
I think of Andre Markov of the Montreal Canadiens. That's really the only 79 that comes to mind.
That's
for
fair.
Me.
All right.
But you can find those jersey numbers on NashvillePredators.com, by the way.
You certainly can. And there's been a lot of effort put in to make them compiled there. So go and check it out. It's under the team section. There's an all-time alphabetical roster, and there's also jersey numbers as well. So an update on our situation as the NHL is paused for, as you mentioned earlier, its second consecutive week.
Yes. So, of course, we're 2 full weeks into this. And so the NHL has been doing a good job of getting some information out. And on Monday of this week, so as we record this here on Friday, March 27th, so on Monday, earlier in the week, the NHL answered a number of frequently asked questions that have come up over the past 2 weeks. The full document, you can read that online, NHL.com has it. We also have a link to it in the Smashville scope this week on Preds.com. But a couple of the more noteworthy items from that document, one of the questions posed was, has any decision been made regarding whether the remainder of the regular season will be played? Has any decision been made regarding what form the Stanley Cup playoffs would take? No to both of those. Of course, the timing of this virus is what's going to impact everything. There's no decision on regular season games or when the playoffs could potentially begin. The form and format of resumption of play scenarios will depend entirely what transpires between now and then. And the NHL is taking into all kinds of logistical constraints. They know they're going to have to be flexible and react to events. And they're certainly taking medical advice as well. And so another question that was brought up is, if the NHL playoffs go into July and or August, could there be a shortened regular season next year? The NHL has been pretty firm on this. Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly has said, no, we do not anticipate a scenario in our resumption of play format that would endanger or interfere with the league's ability to stage and execute the 2020-21 NHL season in its entirety. So they are certainly sold on playing 82 games next season, and they do not want anything that could happen this summer to bleed into that and affect the ability to play a full season. Additionally, on Wednesday afternoon, the postponement of the 2020 NHL Scouting Combine, the 2020 Bridgestone NHL Awards, and the 2020 Draft, that was all announced on Wednesday afternoon. So all of that will be postponed. The location, timing, and format of the 2020 Draft and the Draft Lottery will be announced when details are finalized. Montreal has been promised a draft soon. They were supposed to host it this year. That's good news. I was really excited to go to the draft in Montreal. Obviously, one of the best hockey cities in the world. But that will not happen at this point. And then on Thursday, the Colorado Avalanche announced they had a player test positive for COVID-19, but they then added that player has since recovered as well. That was the third confirmed case for the NHL. As far as a player is concerned, Ottawa has had two players test positive for the virus as well. And of course, news is changing by the week, by the day, by the hour. So always stay tuned on social media and those respective sites for any updates from that standpoint.
A few things from that that stick out to me. Number one, the desire to not affect or change or alter the 82-game schedule for the 2020-21 season. And I think that really makes your window that we're in right now become more serious, because as this drags along, as weeks and months go by, I think it's more and more likely that, you know, you're going to ditch and remove and get rid of this current season in order to not touch the next one. So that's interesting to see. It's not as if, you know, there's just some open season on, oh, well, yeah, we could finish this season up in December. Well, no, I mean, there's going to be most likely some hard lines drawn by the NHL. So I think that's interesting. The second thing is back to the Montreal piece. I think this is something we've learned in workforces across America, right, is that you don't necessarily need to keep the traditional circumstance. So I would not be surprised at all. This is just me personally saying this. If you had a virtual draft or something like that, I don't think in any way it's going to be exactly the way that it was intended to be when it first was scheduled to be in June in Montreal. So interesting to see how that could change as well. But yeah, I mean, uncertain times for sure. And I know you guys have all heard that 1,000 times, so we're not going to dwell on this too much. But in case you had missed, for example, some of that news on Wednesday, I think it's worth mentioning.
Absolutely. So there's your update. We wanted to get that out of the way at the top. Plenty to talk about, too, though, as we roll along here in episode 79. So the Predators have been busy. Tommy Novak, Connor Ingram, they get new contracts. We'll touch on that in just a second. An interview with Preds broadcaster Chris Mason. Dial him up on the telephone and great chat with Mace. As always, coming up, Thomas had a Twitter poll out earlier in the week. What is the top Preds goal of all time? And some interesting responses to that. So we will chat on that topic for a moment, and then plenty of Twitter questions to get to as well. And thanks for sending those in. As you continue to use hashtag Preds Podcast, you can ask us pretty much anything, anytime at this point, and we'll do our best to get to it. As we mentioned, the Predators front office, they're still hard at work. Two more signings this week. Goaltender Connor Ingram is the first one to be announced. A 3-year contract, $700,000 at the NHL level to start, $120,000 at the AHL level, and then progressing from there. The 22-year-old, it was acquired by the Predators over the summer with the intention of starting the season in Milwaukee, which he, of course, has done. He was recalled and served in a backup role for a moment for the Preds earlier in the season. But, you know, if you listen to this show regularly, how good the Admirals have been this season. He's a large reason why that is the case. 21-5-5 is his record in net for the Admirals this season. He's ranked among the leaders in the AHL's goaltending categories, save percentage, goals against average, wins. Those are all career bests for him. And I saw a couple people say on social when this was announced that, oh, Pekka must be retiring after this season. Well, no, that I don't think that's the case. Pekka still has one more year left on his deal. You need goaltenders in your system. You got to have guys playing in Milwaukee, too. This is simply saying that we've been really happy with what Connor Ingram has given us. And whether it's in Milwaukee or in Nashville in due time, that's what this contract essentially says, that they took a chance on him, the Predators did this summer. It's worked out fantastically, and they want him to remain in the organization for a while.
We actually mentioned this in a recent episode, but Rinne and Saros are both only signed through next season. And Pekka Rinne, in his public comments, at least most of them before this year, were pretty clear that he intends to play out the rest of his contract and then kind of see where he feels like he is. And yes, much has been made of UC Saros, at least before the season was paused, perhaps taking the crease, perhaps becoming the starter. He at least was getting, what, 2/3 of the starts, I would say. But even then, like, again, Rinne reduced his cap hit and his salary when he signed this 2-year deal, I guess about a year or so ago already. So even if he were just to be a backup or more of a 50-50 timeshare for next season, I still think that is the most likely scenario. And you're right. Going forward, though, in 2 years, in 3 years, could Ingram be up the initial? I think that's a lot more likely. And again, just to clarify one more time, the AHL and the initial salary, that only means just how much he's paid based on what league that he's in. It doesn't have to do with a waivers process or where he's going to be. Now, what it says is you're thinking and you're intending that maybe he could be here in that year three of the deal if you're the general manager and if you're the Predators. But again, even that's not for sure. For example, Freddie Goudreau signed a very similar deal where year three for him was only a one way in a sense for the initial contract. And yet he was cleared waivers and is in Milwaukee right now as of this recording. So again, I think it is a big vote of confidence for Ingram, who, you know, had kind of had some question marks about him when the Predators acquired him, to say, you know, we want to give you this term and we want to potentially have you up in the NHL level. So yeah, I think that's of the signings we've seen since this pause, probably the biggest one, at least to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then one more came down on Tuesday. Tommy Novak gets a 2-year entry level contract. He had signed an AHL deal. He was playing with the Milwaukee Admirals as well. He's third on the Admirals in points with 42 of them, and he's only a rookie, or at least a rookie in the sense of being a pro hockey player. He went to the University of Minnesota. He was drafted by the Preds way back in 2015. So Tommy's been a member of the organization for a while now. And talking to Admirals general manager Scott Nickel earlier in the week, he said that, you know, we didn't want to give up on Tommy because Tommy Novak didn't have a great senior season at the University of Minnesota, but the Predators have always liked him. They always still wanted to give him a shot in the organization. He has certainly proven himself in Milwaukee this season, so he gets a 2-year entry-level deal. So another name to watch out for there in the next couple of years to come is someone who could challenge for a roster spot down the line. So again, the Preds, they're busy planning for the future. You've still got to do that, and there's still some guys to get signed up, and they've done a good job of that over the last couple of weeks. Four guys now under contract, at least for the next season, some prospects, and some minor league guys as well. So Scott Nickel, David Poile, Brian Poile still hard at work.
And finally, we spoke with Preds broadcaster Chris Mason and former player. I think we teased this earlier that I know you guys hate spoilers, but hear this one at least, that we wanted to hear his take on what it would be like as a player to be in this exact situation. He went through the 2012-2013 lockout, and that one was, of course, ended up being a shortened season, but it was a lot of, are they going to resume? Are they going to play? And then it was more compacted. So at least know that we asked him that question. You can hear his answer right after the break here on the Preds Official Podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Yo, VIP. Let's kick it.
POP, kicking it. Ice, ice. Preds Official Podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to the program. Brooks Bratton and Thomas Willis of NashvillePredators.com. Calvin Smith producing. And we are pleased now to be joined on the line from his home, like so many of us are during these times, by former Predators goaltender, current Predators broadcaster, Chris Mason, kind enough to join us. Mace, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm hanging in there and, you know, just finding ways to stay busy, and more than happy to jump on with you guys and chat some hockey and all things. Yeah, so thanks for having me on.
We certainly appreciated it. I don't know about you. It's kind of a part of me is like, it feels like it just happened, and the other part of me feels like it's been a year since we were in Toronto getting ready to play the Maple Leafs, and then all of a sudden we're headed to the airport and flying back to Nashville with no real indication of what's going to happen next. But we're 2 weeks into this now, so what have the last 2 weeks been like for you, your family, and what's kind of been your approach to all of this?
Well, you know what, honestly, like you said, it was I'm in awe by the how quickly everything happened and how quickly they shut everything down. Started with the NBA, and then you know, the next day the NHL and the other leagues and sporting associations around the world started shutting down. So that was just, you know, a big shock, I think, to everyone about how serious this was, myself included, because at first I was, you know, I didn't know the seriousness of this situation, and you know, quickly found out that this was a big deal. So, you know, it's been good being at home. To be able to be with the family, as you guys know too, the traveling sometimes can get pretty tedious. So, you know, the first few days were great to actually be home and just, you know, kind of decompress, and just kind of reset and spend some time together. But it's a challenge. You know, you have to my kids. My oldest is 13. Daughter Avery. Quinn is 8. My daughter, middle daughter, and I have a 2-year-old son, Fraser. So it's a challenge to find something for everyone to do, and you have to make sure that the girls are getting some schoolwork and some education, and keeping them off their screens and getting physical activity, playing board games, keeping the mind sharp. So we've just been trying to change it up and you know, do a bunch of different things, but make sure we're kind of checking all the boxes on the essentials.
Mace, several of the Preds players are dads themselves. I'm sure they're facing that part of it, but I'm curious, you in your playing career went through at least 2 lockouts, and I think the 04-05 one's a little different because you went overseas, but specifically in that 2012-13 season when it was half a season and it was like, okay, could they be coming back at any moment? I need to stay trained, I need to be ready, and then there was a compressed schedule. How did you navigate that, and how do you think maybe that could compare to what current NHL players are facing with this?
Well, I honestly think it's very similar in terms of you don't know when it's going to end. So, you know, at first, when it first ends, you take a few days, you enjoy, you know, just being at home and not having a schedule. But after a couple days, you start getting antsy and, you try to stay in shape and work out and do all these things because, you know, at first they said, all right, we're going to break for a couple weeks, see what happens. And now, obviously, that's been extended. So it's a mental challenge, you know, in terms of preparing for hockey and to get back to a season that you don't know when it's going to start. And especially now with the situation that these guys are in this year, you know, lockout, it's the start of the season. You know, you're going to have, you know, 40 or however many games to play before playoffs. These guys, we don't know what's going to happen. Are they going to go right into playoffs? These are the most, you know, the biggest, most important games of the season of some guys' careers coming up after such a long lockout or such a long break. So it's going to be very interesting, and it's a challenge. I remember the last lockout in 2013 when I played for the Preds. We had a tough year in terms of injuries. We had that long layoff. We had the summer and then obviously half the season. And it ended up, I think at the end of the year, over half our team was hurt, ended up being injured. So it's going to be a challenge. These guys are pros, though. I think they're in close contact with the team and in terms of, you know, what they should do conditioning-wise and all those types of things. I don't know. I don't think anyone can skate right now because they extended the quarantine for NHL players and traveling staff and all that. So it's tough. It's tough. You just want to get back and play, but at the same time, you have to make sure you're doing the right things, you know, at home to try to at least stay in decent enough shape so you don't get into any injury problems.
Mace, we've started to hear from some NHL players over the last couple of days. We'll get a chance to hear from some Predators players soon, but a few of the guys who have spoken so far have talked about maybe they would prefer to go straight into the playoffs if we do get to a point where the NHL is able to resume in June, July, August. But then a guy like Nick Foligno in Columbus was quick to caution and say, hey, if we're coming back soon, you know, I don't know how I feel about playing too far into August if we're going to try to start the 2021 season on time in October. How do you kind of view that, again, maybe from a former player perspective? And if you're playing games in August and then the NHL says we still want a full 82-game season in 2021, how do you view that? When is there maybe a time that you think it's too late to be playing games or trying to do compressed schedules, anything like that?
Well, I don't know. It is a tough one because I guess at the end of the day, you know, half the league won't be playing in playoffs, so those teams won't have to worry about that. But the teams that are, you know, it drops off in half every round. Some might get 7 games. Some, you know, if you go the full distance, you could be sitting at 28 games or whatever it is. But I definitely get his argument there, and I think to me, it makes the NHL wants to have the playoffs. They want to award a Stanley Cup winner. Revenue-wise, it's going to bring in a lot more money, playoff games in all the buildings than, you know, the beginning of the season in, you know, whenever they decide to start that. But I do get his point on that because that can be pretty grueling if you don't have a proper off-season to get the training, to get the recovery, you know, some guys that are dealing with injuries and all those types of things. So to me, it would make more sense if the NHL would push back next season a little bit and maybe have to tweak when they start that, and maybe if they have to cut down the games or be creative with the schedule to give guys enough, you know, breaks throughout the year to kind of get back to 100%. But it's going to be interesting. They're going to have to get creative no matter what they do and how they decide to move forward. And I guess time is, you know, the biggest telltale. This, the longer it goes, the tougher it gets. But I think they really, really want to get this this playoffs in this year.
Speaking of working out at home, we've seen Matthias Ekholm, for example, rollerblading. And then we've seen you put a pretty impressive performance on. So, A, speak to that. But then I'm curious, what in your experience is actually possible from keeping your physical level up to the right point? Again, it's not as if guys have ice skating rinks in their backyards, for example.
Yeah, you know, well, I'll talk about my video first. It was actually a group of players, four guys that used to be Nashville Predators property. My best friend Ryan Tobler, Mark Mowers, who's a scout for an NHL team, and David Gosselin. We just started putting out, Mark Mowers started putting a video in, just saying, you know what, some people are using this, you know, to feel sorry for themselves, but I'm going to make myself better. And then he did like a spoof workout. So we all took turns making a video of a workout. So I just decided to, you know, take it to the next level. And then I put it out on social media. So that's the fun part right now. During the season, it's tough to put out a ton of, you know, goofy stuff, but this has given a good opportunity, I think, for everyone to get creative. So just having fun with that. But for guys, like, realistically, it's tough. You can't, like, even in the summer, you can't replicate games. You just don't have that feeling, that timing of someone, you know, barreling down, trying to run you through the boards and, you know, take the puck and grind in the corner in front of the net. You can train all you want in the summer and get a good base, but once you get on the ice, it's a different animal. So that's a big concern, I think, for me, and I know the players, is what are they going to do when they get back? Are they going to? I think they'll probably have to. It's been talked about having a training camp of some sort, a condensed training camp, to get back up to full speed, because you really just, no matter what you do off the ice, you can't duplicate games. You know, it's tough. There's no other way to simulate that.
Predators broadcaster Chris Mason is our guest here on the Predators official podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Mace, you touched on it a little bit at the beginning, just with the family and doing some schooling and some board games, that sort of thing. But what have you been doing around the house, binge watching TVs, reading, and anything like that that you can give our listeners some tips on?
Ooh, okay. I've been doing lots of that. So I think everyone in the world is watching Tiger King. I'm about four episodes right in, and that is that's just blowing my mind right now. Done that, caught up on Walking Dead. Ozark just came out, the third season of Ozark. Love that show. I think it came out yesterday, so going to hammer that. But I've been spending a lot of time, when I put the kids down to bed, my best buddy Ryan Tobler, who I just mentioned, he coaches for the Avalanche farm team. We get on PS4 and we're just crushing Borderlands 3 right now. So it's good. You get on the headsets and we talk and we go to different worlds, and oh man, it's so much fun. So that's been my go-to right now.
Mace, are you still watching Dark on Netflix? Season 3 coming up later this year. I'm curious. Willie said he's still all in the other day, but I wasn't sure about you.
Yeah, I went hard on the first season because we're all watching on the plane, and I was really into it, and you know, the whole subtitle thing, and that's a show that, like, I feel you have to be like 100% all in, because there's so much going on. It's a great show and it's an unbelievable concept, but you have to have the right headspace. You can't be checking your phone, or you know, otherwise you're going to be rewinding it every 5 minutes. But it's a great show, but I've yet to just get in that mindset to commit to falling through. I started season 2, but I haven't finished it yet. But it's a great show. Yeah, that's on the list too.
Okay, no, I hear you. I mean, it's been said to be the most challenging plot line on TV right now. So you know, I just had to mention it here. All right, let me give you one more. I am kind of music illiterate a bit compared to Brooks, especially, but I've been singing your Roman Yossi version of your song while washing your hands recently. Well, so talk to me about his Norris campaign as well.
Well, so Mace, I must say that I've kind of adapted, because you made that after the Killers' Mr. Brightside, which actually we'll come back to break next time so people can hear it from that. But Mr. Brightside by the Killers has been my hand washing song, because it's the chorus is right around in that 20-second range and it's perfect. And you had a great readaptation of that to Roman Yossi for Norris.
Yeah, I'll go with that one first. I was like, I just saw it, and I'm like, this is, at first I didn't know what to think of it, because I love that song, I love that group. But then I'm like, it's kind of weird and it's kind of whatever, but I kind of like it. And I kind of watched it like five times because I don't know if it bugged me or if I loved it, you know? Like, so, so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to make my own song up about this and dress up as cool guy and did that song. So again, you know, I embarrassed my family on a weekly basis. That was another one of those ones, but it was fun. I got another song in the works too, nice. A rendition of, a song that Tandy does. I don't know if you guys have seen the show Last Man on Earth, but it's okay. A phenomenal show. It's on Hulu. Will Forte, but he's a hilarious character. So I'm going to try to see if I can pull that off. So that one's in the works. But what was your question again,
Thomas? Well, I was just going to say this. So Roman Josi was on Sportsnet the other day, at least in an article, and said that he wasn't sure it was his best or most consistent season. But I want to hear you say that, yes, it is his best and most consistent season, right?
Yeah, well, of course he's going to say that. The guys are so humble, and you know, you guys know the guys as well as anybody. That it's a great group of guys, and he's one of the best humans on the planet. So of course he's going to say that. But when you look at the numbers, and this is what I try to do as well, is when I'm making a case for him, obviously people are going to think, hey, you work for the Predators, you guys are all biased. Of course you think Roman Josi is the best player in the world, blah blah blah. But I try to present the numbers. So I want to take my opinion out of it and let people decide for themselves. And if we had broadcasts, we're going to do some segments where we're just going to have no names. We're going to put player A and player B, you know, obviously Josi and Carlson or whatever the order would have been, and let the people decide. All right, you tell me, who do you think's the should be the Norris Trophy winner on some of the deeper analytics? Because I think it's easy just to say, hey, I'm not taking anything away from Carlson. He's having, you know, a historic, fantastic season. He's been incredible. But if you want to look and choose the best all-around defenseman in the league, you have to go deeper than points. You have to look at their defensive play. You have to look at their impact on their team. You know, without Roman Josi, I honestly don't think the Predators are in a playoff spot. And the way that he played, and the way that he played without Ellis for 20 games, and just the way that he's led the team, even when they, you know, the team struggled, he's always seemed to be able to make an impact and get the job done. So I think, to me, clearly, and especially once I started digging deeper into some of the other analytics, it's not even close, to be honest with you.
All right, Mace, let's conclude on this. You know these two goaltenders maybe better than anyone in Juuse Saros and Pekka-Rinne. And just before the break, Saros was competing, or at least flirting with even the franchise record for a shutout streak, was playing excellent. There were some who were saying, you know, is this guy the starter now? A, what kind of led to that? And B, if we are to return for this season, I mean, and even go straight into the playoffs, do you think Saros could be the starter for that?
Well, I've ever since I saw him at training camp, when I first retired and came back here, the kid, he just blew me away with his skills and his technical ability and his athleticism and the way that he sees the puck and reads the play and just his, how he reacts instantaneously, his edges when he's down on the ice. I really think he's almost a perfect goalie, in my opinion. And I think we've kind of all seen this, the progression of Juuse Saros. He's getting more games every year, and you always know, you've always known that he's an elite talent, and he's been getting more opportunity. I mean, Pekka's been playing phenomenal the last few years as well, but they're, you know, he's getting older, and they're trying to give him some rest and give Saros some more opportunity, because obviously he's the, you know, incumbent to that position. But at the end of the year, you know, they're going with Saros. He was giving him a chance to win every night. He was playing just lights-out hockey every single game, giving that consistent goaltending. But now that they have the big break, it's I'm guessing, you know, he'll probably get the net to start with, but it's almost like a whole new season. And that's what sucks for somebody like Saros, who was just on a roll in the zone every night. You just knew he was going to go out and put up, have a great game and give the guys a chance. But now, you know, with this break, it's who knows. It's who's ever going to be playing. And like it is now in the NHL, there's not many goalies that you see play 70 games. No one will play 70 games anymore. You know, you even saw Henrik Lundqvist getting healthy scratch this year. So it's changing. It's what have you done for me lately? So I think depending on how they do it, if they play some regular season games to start, or if they go right into playoffs, it's going to be tough. But I think if they just go into playoffs, I mean, I think they'll probably start with Juice.
Well, Mace, it's been weird not seeing you every day. We miss you, but it's been good to talk to you. And all the best to you, the family, cool guy, everyone there at home. And this was fun, and we'll do it again soon.
All right. Well, thank you, guys. Thanks for keeping doing this, too. It's awesome and gives us all something to listen to. So thanks for having me on, guys.
For sure. Thanks, Mace.
Okay. Take care.
Up next, we'll debate the biggest goal in Nashville Predators history. This is the Predators official podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Welcome back to the Predators official podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game. For Brooks, I'm Thomas Calvin, our producer. We may not have Brooks for the next few moments because he'll be air drumming for a while. You promise. And we haven't done that very often. A promise of a song coming in a second segment or a subsequent segment.
There it was.
Because we referenced it in a previous one.
Yeah, that is my official hand washing song. And I invite you, if it is not already, to join in. Every once in a while, I'll switch it up, but that one's pretty consistent. The chorus, which people my age, like I feel like that comes on and just about everybody knows it. So
it's just so angsty, angry.
It's an easy chorus to belt out. And by the time you're done, by the time you get to the synths, which of course I keep going in my head, but that's like, you're good. There's your hand washing time and you're ready to roll.
Sure. Sure. All right. Let's have a fun third segment. At least we're going to go a couple different topics here for this one, both involving polls on Twitter.com. Yes. Wednesday or Thursday, who knows what day of the week it is even now. It was 3 years since the Sharks made their first return from the 2016 playoff series that went 7 games between Nashville and San Jose. And so because of that, back into my feed was Mike Fisher's triple overtime goal.
Which, of course, silly me, I knew this, but I'm like, that wasn't 3 years ago. I'm like, oh, I gotcha.
It was 4 years ago.
4 years and two months.
Which is interesting that's the way the schedule played out. So the Sharks did not return to Nashville to play after that 16th playoff series till March of 2017. And so I was like, and my tweet at that time had said, this is the biggest goal in franchise history. And I stand by that. I think that it was for a couple reasons. Number one, crazy that you forget this. I remember saying this to you in one of the intermissions. I think I had been, as a fan, because I did not start working with the Predators until 2014, but I had been at like all of their playoff home overtime games. Mm-hmm. Until that moment, the Predators had never won at home in overtime till 2016.
In the playoffs.
So, again, like real overtime, right? Yeah, not the five-minute four-on-four.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I guess we didn't have 3-on-3 then. Yeah. Simpler times.
Well, our first season in 2015, there was also a triple overtime.
Double
overtime. And triple OT was in Chicago.
And it was a loss. Yeah, exactly. And so I remember saying to you, like, I want to witness what it would feel like to, because that's the best part about NHL overtime, right, is that the game's over. It's sudden death. I mean, the sudden death, sudden life, some people make that joke. But anyway, that when the puck goes in, I mean, it's over, and it's elation and all of that. And I remember saying to you, like, because, again, it was getting toward 1 o'clock in the morning, and I was like, is this just ever going to happen? So, yes, it tied the series because that was game 4 at 2-2. And then some people threw this in there as well. In game 6, so the Predators lost game 5, Victor Arvidsson scored only about 2 minutes into overtime.
Yeah,
so that they quickly got another playoff home overtime win to force game 7, which they then lost in San Jose. So that's why, to me, it can't be the biggest goal in franchise history anymore because of how the series ended up. So the Predators, of course, have only been past the second round once in their history, went to the Western Conference Final in 2017, and that is when they faced the Ducks, I guess, for the third time in franchise history in the playoffs, second time in 2 years at that point. And you had the Predators in a up 3-2 in that series because they'd gone out in game 5, missing Ryan Johansson, missing Mike Fisher due to injury, and it totally just the definition of stealing a playoff road win. They won game 5, 2-1, had a chance to come back and win the Western Conference, A, for the first time, and then B, go to the Stanley Cup Final for the first time. One, I'll point you to this one fun moment. I think the Predators had 18 shots on goal in that entire game. Like, you forget just, they scored 6 goals because they had 2 empty netters. But they only had like 18 shots in that game. But anyways, it's Colton Sissons who has 2 goals previously in the game. The second one was hard to know if it was his, so a lot of people didn't know he had a hat trick at the time. But the Preds have just killed off a penalty, and then he completes the hat trick. It ends up being the game winner, and it, of course, sends the Predators ultimately to the Stanley Cup Final.
Sissons into the Duck zone, tried to put a move on Fowler. Yarncroft with the puck, slides it across, score! Sissons!
of the Predators game tonight. 5 minutes they killed in the first period. They'll make another defensive play in the left side. Here it is. The pressure. They get help. Now it's out of the zone, and away they go, and they try to make a play, and boy, do they ever. What a finish.
Sometimes you need an opportunity to play in situations to show what you've got. Colton Sissons has done that tonight. What a job by PK Subban in the defensive zone to put pressure, creates a turnover. Sissons tries him 2-on-2, and just a beautiful feed, and Sissons makes no mistake.
And you hear at the end of that call, that's back to the point of opportunity. Colton Sissons was the Predators' first-line center at that point due to the injuries to their first two guys in Fisher and Johansson. So, boy, did he deliver. We wanted to go back and forth on some of the other moments that were mentioned. A big one that kept going back that I did not put in the poll, so I guess I kind of buried the lead here. Colton Sissons, that goal got 55% of the vote. Again, this is very non-scientific. It was just unscientific. It was just for 24 hours on Twitter because I was curious. Mike Fisher, that 3-0 goal, still got 31% of the vote. People still really cherish that one. Rene's goalie goal, which, of course, regular season, so not the significance as far as franchise history, but still pretty cool. 16% of the vote. People really cherish that one. And then I did not even put this one in the poll, but a lot of comments for Kevin Fiala's overtime winner in Game 3.
It was a big one.
Of earlier in that 2017 in the first round against the Chicago Blackhawks. It's kind of funny, and I remember seeing this the other day. The Predators went all those years. I guess it's how statistics even out, right? You kind of regress back to the mean. They had gone all those years without ever winning a playoff home overtime game. Then they went on a run of, they went like 5-0 or something like that, because you've got the Blackhawks and you've got the Mike Fisher in 2016, the Victor Arvidsson in 2016. Then you've got that Kevin Fiala as well. So pretty cool that they went on a bit of a run there for a while, up until, I guess, the Ducks series when they won that game 4. Anaheim did. But interesting just how different moments stick with people. I think, A, people can be biased because they were there, or B, they can be biased because their favorite player. But really, you and I have been treated to being able to see a lot of these cool moments, almost all of these goals in person. So that's been pretty special.
Except for poor Jared Smithson, who only got – he was – so you had four options in your poll.
Yeah.
It was Sissons, Fisher, Rene, and then Jared Smithson in the 2011 playoffs against Anaheim in OT. I mean, that at the time
– oh, my goodness.
Agree that that's not – I mean, that has
at
been surpassed.
Time,
but
that
at the time
– at the time, that was the most significant. So that was the Predators' first ever playoff series win, ultimately, in 2011 against the Ducks. And again, when you compare it to the heartbreak of 2010, losing to Chicago when the floods were going through, the Predators were up in Game 5, all of that controversy, you were starting to ache, like, is there ever going to be a playoff series win here? In that Game 5, Bobby Ryan probably scores the goal of the playoffs, has the Ducks up, and Shea Weber ties the game with, like, 40 seconds left to even force overtime. And then quickly, as it so often is, Nick Spaulding, Jordan Tutu, Jared Smithson put the Predators – it was the first time they'd ever won a Game 5, first time they'd ever won in overtime, then puts them up. They closed it out in Game 6. So, yeah, no question, that was the most significant. But I guess people didn't want to feel that nostalgic anymore. They had moved on past that goal.
That Kevin Fiala goal, as you said, round one in Game 3 of 2017 against Chicago. Remember, of course, the Preds go into Chicago, don't even allow a single goal. They win Game 1, 1-0. They win Game 2, 5-0 behind two shutouts from Pecorine. You come home, and I mean, you're feeling good about yourselves, but it's the Chicago Blackhawks, right? Like,
down 2-0 in the third period.
Yes, exactly. Yes, the Predators score twice in the third period. I think both of them were reviewed too, were they not?
Scored them both.
And they were both reviewed.
Yeah, I think so.
For goaltender interference or things of that nature. And the fact that Fiala scores to put them up 3-0, and I was watching it as you had tweeted it, the clip of it, and there's a shot of Jonathan Toews. The game's over, right? Game's won. The Predators are on the ice. All the Blackhawks are gone. Toews is on the bench, captain of the Blackhawks, the team that has just won 3 Stanley Cups in the last 6 years, and is just watching the replay on the scoreboard and just shaking his head and says something that we can't say on air. But it's just, I mean, that was
like, it was surreal for him. He's like, is this really happening?
Yes, and at that point,
we forget so quickly. Were Western Conference regular season champions, were the first seed. I mean, they were supposed to be the easy first step to then later go on to second and third rounds for them.
Yes, and it's just disbelief from their captain. And at that point, and the Predators, of course, win Game 4 and sweep the Hawks. But, I mean, how demoralizing at that point must that have been for the Chicago side? Yeah. And for the Predators side, That sweep.
First time they'd ever been up 3-0 in a series.
Exactly. And then, of course, the first sweep. Do the Preds go to the final if they don't sweep the Blackhawks?
Yeah, great question. All right, and you can play the hypothetical game all day long, but studies would show, history would show, that you traditionally need a quick and short series in the first round just to be healthy enough, strong enough to go all the way.
Yes, yeah. Most teams, not every season, but most Stanley Cup winners do have at least one series that only goes 4 or 5 games, mm-hmm. because you, especially now, it's so taxing. You simply need a week. If you can win in 4 or 5, that can give you almost a week at times to just rest and practice, of course, but to not have to deal with a game setting. And so that's a big one, the Fiala one. I would argue I'm in agreement with the majority of that poll and with you, I think, now. Just because of what the Colton Sissons goal did to get, any goal, of course, if the result would have been different in the final, we'd have a whole different slew of options to talk about. But because of what the Sissons goal did, I just don't see how you could say that there's a bigger goal in franchise history than that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I go back to the Kevin Fiala in 2017. My counter to two different people, which I didn't get a response on this. I don't know if they just couldn't even speak to me or what, but. I said, okay, so my question to that would be, how do you decide that the order of importance on any of the goals in that series? My prime example being, as you mentioned, only one goal was scored in game one. So how is Kevin Fiala's goal any bigger than Victor Arvidsson's? Because that was stealing game one on the road in a 1-0 hockey game. That sets up the whole series. If you lose game one, I mean, who knows the way it goes? And I hear someone's point, because you and I were feeling the same way in 2017. It's the Blackhawks. And if you lose game three, all of a sudden you're like, here they come. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, great. They're going to tie this series. They'll tie the series. It'll go to game five in Chicago. And and you're thinking all those thoughts again. So it's easy to play coulda, woulda, shoulda, or what would have happened if Kevin Fiala hadn't won the game in game three. But again, just it's cool that so many of those big moments have happened at home as well. So many mm-hmm. Predators fans were able to see it. One that didn't, I mentioned this earlier, but You do have to give Pontus Åberg credit, who was playing on the first line as well in that Game 5 in 2017. It was an all-Swede goal. Mattias Ekholm, Philip Forsberg, and Pontus Åberg, mm-hmm. or Åberg, combined for the 2-1 game winner in Game 5 to then set the Preds up to win Game 6 by Colton Sissons. But cool to reminisce. I'm sure we'll talk about some more as this podcast goes on. But I was not intending to do that. I would not be surprised if, honestly, over the summer, we have a whole bracket that the Preds NHL puts out. But I truly was just like, hey, this has 200 retweets, Mike Fisher's triple overtime goal. Is there a bigger goal? And so, yes, Colton Sissons is your answer.
It was fun to go through and watch him. I did so last night on your Twitter feed. If you haven't seen him, Thomas tweeted 4 clips, I think. Some of those goals, 4 or 5 clips. So if you have a moment, which you probably do right now, go ahead and reminisce and take a look back. I certainly enjoyed that. And that was Kenny Albert, by the way, on the call that we played with Joe Micheletti and Brian Boucher. I think you and I feel the same way, that anytime we hear Kenny Albert calling hockey, it's instantly a playoff game.
And we saw
us.
Him so much during that April, May, and June.
Because he had St. Louis. He had the St. Louis series with us, too. Uh-huh. So he was with us for 2 series.
He knew us really well. I will say this as we close. The coolest thing about tweeting those goals is all the replies of people saying, I was with my dad and that moment happened. Or I took my son to that game, where I had one person that was saying, I was at a wedding. I was watching on my phone. I'll never forget when I experienced that. Yeah. And then incidentally, I guess I'll bring this up since somebody mentioned it. The 2008 playoffs, when the Preds were playing the Red Wings, they were down 2-0 in the series in game 3. This is the famous 2 goals in 8 seconds. And again, they were down 2-0 in the series, and there's about 5 minutes left in the game. I'm going off by memory here. My dad and I were there. I had on the fourth row. I don't know how we got such good
well
seats.
Done.
Yeah. But I think it was Erad and Suter combined to tie it, and then it's basically off the faceoff. Arnett scores. He then unfortunately is injured in the celebration by Radulov afterwards. But that was one of the coolest moments at that point, just because it was like, no, we're not going to go down and get swept here. The Preds tie that series 2-2, lose game 5 in a heartbreaker. In overtime, if I remember.
Bless you, Calvin.
Sorry, I ruined your whole thing there with my seats.
That's fair. I think Radek Bonk factored into that. Anyways, now I'm getting really lost. But let's go on to the fourth segment. But we'll bring up top goals again.
Well, I've heard people, too, at least to that point, a lot of people have said that was the loudest they had ever heard that mm-hmm. arena.
Gosh, yeah.
With goals back-to-back. Cool. So it's pretty cool. That's another way to go back. I don't know about you, but I always love watching the crowd react. Reaction. in moments like that. Mm-hmm. It makes you smile.
Yeah, it really is. Let's answer some of your Twitter questions in our final segment here on the Preds Official Podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll see if we can get Calvin to sneeze again. Stick with us.
Fourth and final segment of episode 79 of the Predators Official Podcast. Welcome back. Here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, Brooks Bratton, Thomas Willis, here to bring you home. Before we get to a couple questions real quick, I feel like you guys are pretty good at doing this already, but keep checking Preds.com and at PredsNHL on social for all the latest updates in the days and weeks to come. We're still trying to push out a lot of content. Got a lot of fresh stuff on the website and then, of course, on social as well. All kinds of fun things going on, so stay tuned there.
And the re-airs of games will be continuing on both Fox Sports Tennessee and this very station, 102.5 The Game, so check that out Sunday night and then Thursday and Sunday night. So three more games coming up. I'm sure more will come after that. Some big goaltending performances coming up next week. You've got, yes, the goalie goal we talked about in our last segment, and then a Yusei Saro shutout coming up as well. So make sure you're tuning in. Those are all Thursday and Sundays at 7 p.m.
Check it out. A couple questions to get to. O-Ray said, I don't want this to come off weird or negative, but I've been deadly curious. Why do you think the Preds have never really had what the league considers an elite superstar talent like a Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin? My thing to that would be, in order to get one of those players, you got to be at the bottom of the league. You got to get a first-round draft pick, right? You got to get a first overall pick.
That's what I was just going to say. What do those guys have in common? They were the first and second picks of the draft.
Exactly.
Generational talents.
They're generational talents. And so the Predators, luckily, have been a playoff team more often than not. And they're simply, they've done a great job of building through the rest of the organization and the draft and free agency. That's simply why there's never been a player who would argue, I mean, top 10, top 20 all time in the league.
And the closest thing that they've had to that was actually the season that Chris Mason mentioned way back in our second segment, that lockout shortened year where the Predators did dip after a good 2012 finish when they beat the Red Wings in the playoffs. That's when they drafted Seth Jones, I guess, fourth overall. And that was kind of their chance in the last decade, really, that they've been in the top five. And that turned into Ryan Johansson. So again, maybe not the personality per se, but it will take a few years to maybe get there as well. But Seth Jones is really the closest thing they've had. I mean, they just haven't had a chance to draft a Nathan MacKinnon, maybe would be a recent example that at least was in that conversation. But Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid, they were known for what, 2-3 years before they were drafted, how special they were going to be. Same with Alex Ovechkin as well. And again, like you said, the ping pong balls just haven't been there because the Preds season hasn't put them in that draft lottery.
Yeah. Fair question, though. Rick had a couple, but we'll go with favorite non-Predators sporting event you have ever attended. Mine has to be my senior year. I went to college at Robert Morris University in Pittsburgh. And if you're a Kentucky fan, you're going to roll your eyes, but let us have our moment when we beat Kentucky in the NIT. They were a 1 seed. We were an 8 seed, but because Kentucky's court had a commitment at that point in time, they couldn't play it there. So they came to our tiny little 3,000-seat gym in Moon Township, Pennsylvania, and the Robert Morris Colonials defeated Kentucky. I was sitting on the floor underneath the basket where Kentucky missed the final shot, and it was one of the coolest things I had ever seen. So if you've ever grown up going to a football game or a basketball game at your alma mater, and you rush the floor, or you rush the field, you know what that feels like, and that's what, I mean, just the feeling of elation. And honestly, one of the greatest nights in our school's history. So again, if you're a Kentucky fan like Darren McFarlane, I get it. It's whatever. But it was cool for us.
Let's go Bobby Moe, I guess. I'm glad you gave me time to think about this. I haven't been to a ton of different sporting events. I have been to March Madness when it was in Nashville. I've been to a lot of college football games in my time. Never been to an NBA game in my life. I did get to go to Yankees Mets at Shea Stadium. That was my first ever baseball game.
Nice. Yeah, we've been to a Braves game, and I've also been to a couple Steelers playoff games growing up. Actually,
some Titans playoff games. I've been to a Padres game. But anyways, I think my answer would be Tennessee Volunteer football games at Neyland Stadium. Calvin is making a face over here, but anyways, my dad and brother, one of my best friends, Grant, we would go about once a year. So I did get to go watch them. back to Kentucky. I watched them destroy Kentucky in their undefeated 1998 national champion season. So
nice.
Go Vols, I'll say that.
Taylor said, what's one must-have song for a quarantine playlist? My favorite song of all time is Where the Streets Have No Name by U2. That always seems to get me going no matter what mood I'm in. But there's plenty, and I hope you're using this time to discover some new music.
Yeah, there are. And you and I are both on Apple Music, so you can actually see what we've been listening to. Check us out there. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go a different direction because I had not thought of an answer to this until this very moment. I will go with He Will Hold Me Fast by Shane and Shane. That's really been a great song I've been listening to a lot recently, so check that one out.
And then our good friend John had a number of questions, but you can go ahead and listen because I feel, or sorry, answer this one off the top because I feel like some listeners would also be interested to hear in case they're looking to bang out some movies and binge watch.
Best movie trilogy, John asked. Boy, that's tough. I'm biased. I thoroughly enjoyed The Lord of the Rings, both the book and the film that was put on in the early 2000s. That's really great. The traditional Star Wars trilogy is pretty good too. Empire Strikes Back is good, but then I think you could have issues with both the fourth one and the sixth one, again, because they did the middle trilogy first, for those who don't know. So Jason Bourne trilogy is not bad either. Bourne Supremacy is good. I'll give you one more to close. The Dark Knight Batman trilogy by Christopher Nolan that came out recently. Again, wow, that was just a string of the middle movie being the best one in just about all of those, but there you go. There's a few off the top of my head.
I recently discovered this is one of your favorite movies, and I really enjoyed it as well. I forgot that I had purchased it. I own Interstellar, so I might have to find some time to watch Interstellar.
Interstellar is great. Christopher Nolan is the greatest director of our time, so you can hear that as we close. All right, send us home.
There you go. For Thomas Willis, you can follow him at Tom A. Willis on Twitter. I'm Brooks Bratton. You can follow me at Brooks Bratton on Twitter and Instagram. As we said, you can tweet us anytime using hashtag PredsPodcast and continue to follow at PredsNHL. On social as we roll along here in this season pause. Thanks to Chris Mason. Certainly a great conversation with Mace. We always enjoy his perspective. And we hope you're finding some time to binge watch some new music, get some reading in, limit your screen time, hang out with the family. And of course, we appreciate you finding time to join us here on the POP. We will keep it going as long as we can, as often as we can during this break. Stay safe, stay healthy. Welcome to April.